This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading for Fortune. I'll be reading Forbes magazine. This is actually the December 2025 and January 26 edition. And this first article is written by William Baldwin, titled Big Blue's Quantum Bet. Investors are throwing money at quantum startups. Maybe they should be looking at a more venerable player that has a lot of practice building things. Half a century ago, a factory in Poughkeepsie, New York, cranked out computer hardware. The profits from mainframes financed pampered employees, scientific research, and dividend that made International Business Machines the most valuable company on the planet. Now, a diminished IBM gets most of its revenue from soft things, computer programs and business services. But it's at work on a new kind of machine that could return Poughkeepsie to its glory days. This is where it will assemble quantum computers, the magical devices designed to tackle mathematical challenges that would overwhelm an ordinary computer. If quantum delivers on its promises, engineers will use it to make giant strides in the design of drugs, vaccines, batteries, and chemicals. Last year, Boston Consulting Group predicted that come 2040, quantum hardware and software providers will be taking in $90 billion to $170 billion of annual revenue. IBM has been part of this rapidly evolving technology since the turn of the century. Leading its effort, Jay Gambetta, 46-year-old physicist from Australia, who oversees 3,000 employees on six continents doing research. He will not stint quantum since he has spent his entire career in that field. Gambetta joined IBM's Watson Research Center, 39 miles south of the Poughkeepsie factory, in 2011 after postdoc years at Yale and then on the faculty of the University of Waterloo. He says, quote, "While I like teaching, really I wanted to build." There are a lot of ways to build a qubit, the information storing element of a quantum computer, and any might lead to a winner in the race to construct a useful machine. Light's photons are quantized, a discovery that got Albert Einstein a Nobel Prize, and made up qubits in some experimental computers. Ions, charged atoms, can be the basis of a quantum system. Yet another angle involves electric currents flowing in tiny superconducting wires deposited onto slivers of silicon. Within 3 years of Gambetta's arrival at Watson, he and his colleagues decided to bet on that third option, turning away from photonics, trapped ions, and other avenues of research. The superconducting approach involves a chip chilled to a 70th of a degree above of absolute zero, a necessity for the superconductor to work, and the delicate dance of electrons to be protected from corrupting thermal noise. The chip's operating elements, called transmons, are controlled by pulses of microwaves. Its marching orders comes from a conventional computer sitting nearby. It helps that the unimaginably low temperature can be had with devices bought off the shelf. That chip manufacturing is something IBM can do in-house, and that the microwaves, which are much like the microwaves running a cell phone, are old hat to electrical engineers. Quote, "We don't have to reinvent things," Gambetta says. "We leveraged 50 years of radar and microwave technology to make beautiful, clean microwave notes that we play." Alongside IBM and a few other giant enterprises researching quantum computing are a bevy of startups making pronouncements about their breakthroughs and their futures. They all have a lot of work to do before anything of great commercial value emerges. That hasn't stopped investors from flinging money at them. A firm in Hoboken, New Jersey, is one of those hot prospects. This corporation started out in the business of selling inkjet cartridges. That didn't work out, so it switched to beverage distribution, which also fizzled. It changed its name to Quantum Computing and is selling photonics products. On its website, quote, "Our vision, put quantum into the hands of a billion people." It was recently trading at 9,500 times revenue. There are visions and there are working machines. IBM has quantum computers plugged in at the Poughkeepsie factory, at the research lab, and in Europe and Asia. Scientists at Moderna, the Cleveland Clinic, Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and many other institutions are running test programs on these machines, aiming to be ready with algorithms when faster, larger, and more fault-tolerant quantum computers arrive. IBM has good company betting on transmons. Google is taking the same tack. Might some entirely different scheme win the day? Gambetta considers this unlikely, but he thinks about it. He makes a point of hiring engineers away from competitors pursuing other technologies, precisely so they can find flaws in whatever IBM is doing. Some of these rivals have announced impressive results in small-scale experimental settings, but the leap to larger machines involves ever more demanding precision in the fabrication of quantum elements and the circuits that control them. Asks Gambetta rhetorically, quote, "Do you have a plan to scale that technology? Are you building the fab with a lot of packaging?" The problem there is the problem that qubits are prone to error. As computing programs get more complex and involve more qubits, errors could accumulate to the point that the readout would be meaningless. Researchers are working on different ways to undo mistakes along the way, such as by having redundant qubits that keep one another in line. But this adds yet more complexity and more opportunities for failure. Google has declared that it has a dramatically improved system for error correction. IBM has broadcast its answer to this part of the puzzle in a scientific journal. Says Gambetta, quote, "I think we have the most transparent roadmap for error correction at scale." Quantum computing relies on two peculiarities of nature that were uncovered a century ago. One is that a fine-grained level, the location and properties, one is that at a fine-grained level, the location and properties of objects are neither here nor there. Rather, they have, when measured, a certain probability of being here and a certain probability of being there. God rolls dice. The other counterintuitive phenomenon is that the two distinct objects can be married to each other, entangled in the physicist's term, even when separated. Measuring one determines a measurement of the other. This fact bothered Einstein. He dismissively called it spukhafte Fernickwing, spooky action from afar. The entanglement can be, but does not have to be, a subatomic distance. This year's physics Nobel went to scientists who demonstrated that it can take over a stretch visible to the eye. With this in mind, IBM's engineers will be pushing the microwave envelope. They are scaling up quantum computers in modular fashion, eventually wiring together across several feet two or more cabinets of super-chilled superconducting chips, with the qubits in one entangled with the qubits in the next. Einstein would be appalled. Computers of the usual sort move in a deterministic fashion, a zero becoming a one under a precise set of rules. Quantum computers make fuzzy moves. Impulses sent to a qubit nudge it one way or the other. If the nudges, called gates, are cleverly arranged, and if they act simultaneously on entangled qubits, their effect is to gradually push each qubit's probable value toward either 0 or 1 in such a way that the qubits spell out a probable solution to a problem. This is a messy process, and it involves many cycles of nudges, with the superconducting chip frequently going back to a conventional computer for advice on what to do next. Consider the problem Vanguard faces as it keeps its $44 billion tax-exempt bond ETF up to date. there are at least 63,000 bonds to choose from. It selects 9,800, trying to get a mix that delivers a good yield while incurring the least possible risk. There is a certain hazard in lending money to Chicago at the same time as lending to Illinois, since both are at risk of being wrecked by pension-hungry unions. Numerous constraints, such as keeping the average maturity within a certain range, makes the assignment mathematically difficult. There is no way, at present, to find the optimal solution. Vanguard does the best it can, letting a conventional computer come up with a tolerably good answer. The process takes a few minutes and involves several hundred trillion calculations. Quantum computing offers the prospect of getting better answers. In a recent experiment, IBM and Vanguard teamed up to explore what would happen if you wanted to optimally select from 109 securities. To reach out each possible combination is unrealistic. On Vanguard's computer, it would require a runtime somewhat longer than the age of the universe. The quantum machine did not have to look at each combination sequentially. It was, in effect, looking at all possibilities at once, humming its way on those microwave notes toward the optimum. It groped toward an answer after 4,200 gate operations. IBM has to deliver a lot more to be useful to a client like Vanguard. In its vision, in 2029, a room-sized, fault-tolerant, modular computer in Poughkeepsie that can run 100 million gates. Sometime before then, Gambetta says, smaller machines working alongside classical computers will be beating out purely classical computers at practical tasks like portfolio optimization. IBM already has in hand $1 billion of commitment for quantum services. It would be easy to picture IBM as a stodgy firm, good at delivering reliability to banks and airlines, but unlikely to beat out nimble startups at the cutting edge. But note this. After a century of being run mostly by salesmen, the company now has a chief executive, Arvind Krishna, a PhD electoral engineer, or electrical engineer, who used to have Gambetta's job. Could that firm in Hoboken, with its photons, race ahead of IBM and its transmons? Could happen, or maybe it will go back to distributing sodas. This next article is written by Justin Birnbaum, titled The Miracle of Omaha. After escaping an impoverished childhood and surviving a gunshot wound at 20, Terrence Crawford earned more than $100 million in his career as a boxer. With Warren Buffett in his corner, the 38-year-old champion is now staring down the ultimate opponent, father time. Days before the biggest fight of his career, a championship bout against Canelo Alvarez in Las Vegas in September, unbeaten Terrence Bud Crawford received a presumptuous addition to his watch collection. Watch Guys, a luxury reseller, gifted him a $15,000 Rolex Submariner, and even though he was 48 hours away from facing one of the toughest opponents in boxing history, the inscription on the back of the timepiece boldly predicted his new record, 42-0. They believed in me that much that they knew I'm going to win, says Crawford, 38, reflecting on the victory by unanimous decision from inside B&B Sports Academy, his boxing gym in Omaha, Nebraska. I had it in my mind that Alvarez wasn't beating me. There was nothing he could do to win that fight. The soft-spoken Crawford has preferred to let his fists do the talking over the course of his 17-year professional career, which includes 31 knockouts, 18 world championships across five divisions, and three undisputed titles. But by jumping up two weight classes to defeat the heavily favored Alvarez, he cemented his place in the boxing pantheon alongside other prize-fighting icons of his era, including Manny Pacquiao and Oleksandr Usyk. Such an audacious gamble, putting his undefeated record on the line to fight the much larger Alvarez, came with an even bigger financial reward, the largest payday of his career. Forbes estimates Crawford earned $50 million that night, pushing his lifetime boxing earnings north of $100 million. Don't expect him to spend it all in one place. Crawford has invested in the stock market, and he has amassed a real estate portfolio worth more than $20 million because, as he says, quote, God ain't making more land. He even insists that his watch collection, which Forbes values between $500,000 and $1 million, and features such blue-chip pieces as Patek Philippe Travel Time Aquanaut, an Audemars Piguet Royal Oak chronograph, and several Rolexes, is an asset bound to grow in value rather than a flashy indulgence. Quote, making the money I'm making in the ring, I don't need to rush anything, he says. Some people want to rush and take risk, and I'm not a big risk taker when I can control it. With agency over his finances, he'll be damned if he lets a dollar go to waste. In his merchandise business, for example, Crawford once refused to spend an additional 99 cents to add a custom neck tag to a new line of t-shirts. That cost $12 to make and sell for $40. And even though he generously picked up a $2,000 dinner tab for a group of 18 friends just last month, he made sure to score a 15% off coupon beforehand. He's frugal, says Crawford's lifelong friend, Stephen Nelson, the head of operations at his gym. He believes in spending money that makes sense. That's one thing Crawford has in common with the wealthiest resident of his native Omaha, Warren Buffett. The chairman and CEO of Berkshire Hathaway is also famously financially prudent, living in the same house he bought in 1958 for $31,500, driving modest cars, eating at McDonald's, and using a flip phone despite his roughly $150 billion fortune. Buffett has become a huge admirer of Crawford over the years and has attended several of his fights. The 95-year-old Oracle of Omaha even skirted his 10 p.m. bedtime by a few hours in September to watch the Alvarez match on Netflix. In addition to appreciating Crawford's prowess in the ring, Buffett is impressed by his fellow Nebraskan's measured approach to investing. Quote, I've seen an awful lot of fight champions that die busted, and the people around them get rich, Buffett says. I don't think Bud is going to end up that way at all. He's got his head screwed on. The odds certainly weren't in Crawford's favor growing up in North Omaha, an area plagued by crime and poverty. In 2008, the then 20-year-old was hit by a bullet in the back of his hand while sitting in his car after a dice game. It missed his brain by inches. Watching his family struggle financially, a young Crawford picked up a habit of stashing every dollar away. Eventually, he realized that money in the shoebox ain't really saving money. Crawford credits his fourth-grade teacher, Jamie Nolet, for playing a key role in opening his eyes to the bigger financial picture and introducing him to an accountant. He also used to spar with former world champion Timothy Bradley, who told him to invest and to form an LLC. That advice would come in handy when Crawford started fighting for purses north of $1 million in 2015. The money only got better over the next decade, especially after he acrimoniously split from his former promoter, Bob Arum's Top Rank Boxing, in 2021. While the biggest fights in the sport eluded Crawford for most of his career, including several failed attempts to face the legendary Pacquiao, he had his moment 2 years later, demolishing Errol Spence Jr. in 9 rounds, reportedly earning $25 million for the fight. Quote, in matchup after matchup, Crawford has consistently defied the expectations of a lot of people who, early on, did not think he had superstar potential, says sportscaster Jim Lampley, who spent 30 years as the voice of HBO Championship Boxing. Quote, he just understood it was a matter of being patient enough, following his own principles, fighting the way he can fight, and everything would turn out all right. And it did. For now, Crawford isn't thinking about a rematch with Alvarez, and he isn't ready to decide what's next for his boxing career, either. Retiring undefeated, akin to greats like Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Rocky Marciano, would be a, quote, blessing, he says. And he certainly doesn't have to rush back into the ring for income. Forbes estimates that Crawford earns at least $2 million annually from brand partnerships, including Crown Casino, Riyadh Season, and Everlast, as well as other business endeavors. His longtime coach, Bernie Davis, recently said it would take $100 million to get Crawford back in the ring. When he does finally hang up his gloves, Crawford wants to dive deeper on his real estate interests. He currently has a mix of nearly 80 properties, residential and commercial, spread across Omaha, Kansas City, and Colorado Springs, all paid for in cash. Eventually, he wants to add Las Vegas to that group. His portfolio operates at a loss right now, which he expects to change in a few years, but he's not willing to chase a quick windfall to make that happen. I don't want to take chances, Crawford says. I take too many chances in the ring. This next article is written by Ian Martin, titled AI's Inner Voice. 11 Labs' computer voices are so convincing they could fool your mother. That's both a blessing, its 30 under 30 alumni founders are now both billionaires, and a curse for the four-year-old company. Dubbed films in Poland are horrible. A lone lector delivers all the dialogue in an enervated Slavic monotone. There is no cast, no variation between speakers. Young audiences hate it. Ask any Polish person and they will tell you it's terrible, says Mateusz Staniszewski, the co-founder of AI speech outfit 11 Labs. I guess it was a communist thing that stuck as a cheap way to produce content. While working at Palantir, Staniszewski teamed up with a high school friend and Google engineer, Piotr Dubkowski, to experiment with artificial intelligence. The pair realized that one project, a particularly promising AI public speaking coach, could solve the uniquely Polish horror of Leonardo DiCaprio or Scarlett Johansson being drowned out by a lector star like Maciej Gudowski. The pair pooled their savings and by May 2022 had quit their jobs to work full-time on 11 Labs. Out of the gate, their new AI text-to-speech generator was leagues better than the robotic voices of Apple's Siri and Amazon's Alexa. 11 Labs' AI voices were capable of happiness, excitement, and laughter. In January 2023, 11 Labs launched its first model. It could take any piece of text and use AI to read it aloud in any voice, including a clone of your own, or worryingly, someone else's. There was immediate demand. Authors could instantly spawn audiobooks with the software. Pro rates now start from $99 a month for higher quality and more time. YouTube creators used 11 Labs to translate their videos into other languages. Its models can now speak in 29. The Warsaw and London-based startup landed deals with language learning and meditation apps. Then media companies like HarperCollins and Germany's Bertelsmann jumped in. Quote, it was obvious that this was the best model and everyone was picking it off the shelf, says investor Jennifer Lee of Andreessen Horowitz, which co-led a $19 million round in May 2023. A year later, the co-founders were honored as part of Forbes 30 Under 30 Europe. Others, though, found more unnerving uses. AI soundalikes of public figures such as President Trump, crassly narrating video game duels, actress Emma Watson reading Mein Kampf, and podcaster Joe Rogan touting scams quickly went viral. Worse, fraudsters began using AI cloning tools to impersonate loved ones' voices and steal millions in sophisticated deepfake swindles. None of it stopped venture capitalists from pouring in money. 11 Labs has raised more than $300 million in all, soaring up to a $6.6 billion valuation in October to become one of Europe's most valuable startups. Staniszewski, 30, who acts as CEO, the firm has no traditional titles, and research head Dabkowski, 30, are now both billionaires, worth just over $1 billion each, per Forbes estimates. Around half of 11 Labs' $193 million in trailing 12-month revenue comes from corporates like Cisco, Twilio, and Swiss recruitment agency Adecco, which use its tech to field customer service calls or interview job seekers. Epic Games uses it to voice characters in Fortnite, including a chat with Darth Vader, with the consent of James Earl Jones's estate. The other half of its revenue comes from the YouTubers, podcasters, and authors who were early adopters. Quote, "When you talk to them, it's mind-blowing how good they are," says Gartner analyst Tom Kasho. Unlike most AI firms, too, 11 Labs is profitable, netting an estimated $116 million in the last 12 months, a 60% margin. It's now competing against giants like Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and OpenAI to become the de facto voice of AI. It's not a new space. Tech companies started spinning up products to listen, transcribe, and generate speech about a decade ago. While it's somewhat of a sideline for Microsoft, Satya Nadella was willing to shell out $20 billion to buy NASDAQ-listed voice transcription service Nuance in March 2022. OpenAI launched its own voice tool, which can feed human conversations into ChatGPT in October 2024. Now, this article does continue on, but that's all the time we have for right now. Once again, this has been Forbes Magazine, the December and January edition. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Hello and welcome to Readings from Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, read to you by Steve Malisi. Robos that come with a human touch. These services aim for a sweet spot that combines digital investing with real-life advisors. The first computer-driven advisory service, otherwise known as a robo-advisor, launched just over 15 years ago. Since then, the S&P 500 index has returned more than 700%, an eight-fold increase. And automated investment advisors now manage an estimated $1.2 trillion in assets, says David Goldstone, manager of investment research at Condor Capital Wealth Management, which tracks robo-advisors in the Robo Report. As the industry matures, many investors have outgrown digital-only offerings and are ready to graduate to a so-called hybrid advisor service, which uses the same technology that drives robo-advisors, but gives you access to a human advisor too. Hybrids have really become a dominant model in robos, says Goldstone. Indeed, many digital-only services have recently shut down. In late 2025, U.S. Bank announced it was closing its robo-advisor platform. Earlier in 2025, UBS ended its service, called Advice Advantage. In mid-2024, J.P. Morgan Wealth Management terminated its robo, automated investing. And Goldman Sachs sold its digital advisory service to Betterment. A second set of eyes. By contrast, many hybrid services are flourishing. At Betterment, in recent months, for instance, we've seen more growth in the premium side of the business than we ever have, says Nick Holman, Betterment's Senior Director of Human Advice, referring to the firm's stepped-up robo-services that offers unlimited access to a certified financial planner. These customers love technology, lower fees, and automation, he adds. But as their income and net worth grow and life happens, investors just want that added reassurance a second set of eyes that can review the situation. That's more than a pure robo can do. For that reason, we reviewed 7 popular hybrid offerings from financial service firms Axos Investment, Betterment, Fidelity, JP Morgan Wealth Management, Merrill Edge, SoFi, and Vanguard, highlighting the pros and cons of each. Schwab isn't included in this review because the firm recently retired its hybrid offering, Schwab Intelligent Portfolios Premiums. Clients have access to a range of other financial planning services in addition to still having access to our robo-advisor, Schwab Intelligent Portfolios, a Schwab spokesperson said. Like robos, most hybrids rely on a short online questionnaire designed to identify your investing goals and time horizon and to classify your tolerance for risk. The queries lead to a recommendation for an appropriate portfolio composed mostly of exchange-traded funds and, in some cases, mutual funds. The added access to a human advisor means you can get some guidance on your investments as well as help with other financial topics and goals, such as budgeting, buying a house, managing school debt, and making tax-efficient investment decisions. But the amount of access and the scope of guidance the services can give vary from firm to firm. That's why it's important to understand what each hybrid advisory service offers and what it doesn't. Axos Invest Managed Portfolios. Basics. The minimum required to invest varies between $100 and $1,000, and fees range from 0.20% to 0.58%, depending on the investment model you choose. But you must pay a minimum of $40 in fees yearly, either through the annual management fee on assets or a $10 quarterly charge. Pros. A member of Axos's advisor team helps you choose among 24 model portfolios, which include strategies geared toward different risk profiles as well as thematic approaches focused on technology, for example, or the American Dream, a portfolio that includes the stocks of consumer products companies and automakers. On top of that, you can access portfolios from 6 institutional asset managers, such as Invesco, Franklin Templeton Investments, and Clearbridge Investments, though higher minimums may apply. More customized portfolios can be created if you have $25,000 to $50,000 to invest, says Tracy Gallman, Axos's chief investment officer. Cons. You don't get a dedicated advisor, and Axos advisors aren't certified financial planners or chartered financial analysts, two of the better-known industry designations. Instead, they are registered investment advisor representatives with Series 65 or 66 licenses, which means they're acting as fiduciaries. They are legally bound to act in your best interests. The firm's philosophy is to teach and guide you so that you make your own financial and investing decisions. The advisors can't help on tax questions, but they can help you make decisions about how to invest or when to take Social Security, for instance. We want to be very educational, says Gallman. We want to help the person be an active participant in their decision-making. Takeaway. The depth and breadth of the portfolio offerings here might be best suited to investors who want to get involved and make educated decisions. Betterment Premium. Basics. The Betterment Premium Advisory Service requires at least $100,000 and costs 0.65% in annual fees for the first $1 million. The service charges 0.15% on assets over $1 million. Pros. You get unlimited access to a team of certified financial planners, says Betterment's Holman. They can cover almost every aspect of your financial life, from retirement planning to tax strategies to buying a home. Things they can't cover are fielded by a third party. Help with estate planning, trusts and wills, for instance, comes from folks at Trust and Will for an extra fee. Customers can choose among 11 investment portfolios, including a low-cost core stock and bond portfolio, an innovative technology-focused or value-tiled portfolio, and a 100% bond portfolio. There's even a cryptocurrency ETF portfolio. Premium clients get extra perquisites too, compared with customers of Betterment's digital-only robo-service. Among other things, those include a 0.25% digit-point boost in interest earned on cash reserves and a securities-backed line of credit. You can borrow against non-retirement investments and get fast access to cash. Cons. The $100,000 minimum is beefy. The fee isn't low either, compared with other hybrids we profile here, though it is less than the typical 1% annual rate that many CFPs and money managers charge. Plus, you don't get a dedicated advisor, though all Betterment advisors hold a CFP certification. Premium isn't trying to replace a dedicated advisor for high net worth individuals, Holman says. Betterment has a different business line for that. Takeaway. Betterment Premium is best for investors who love automation and need or want additional advice but are fee sensitive, or their financial situation is not super complex, says Holman. Fidelity Go Plus Coaching. Basics. Fidelity's hybrid version of its robo-advisor, Fidelity Go Plus Coaching, kicks in automatically for anyone with an account balance above $25,000. The fee is 0.35% a year. Pros. You get unlimited access to one-on-one coaching calls with an investment professional who can help you plan for investing goals, such as saving for retirement, buying a home, or wealth building for the future, says a firm spokesman. Some of the professionals are Series 66 licensed, and many hold CFP certifications. All can answer fixed income topics, too. There are no underlying fund fees. All of the portfolios are built with Fidelity's Flex Funds, a group of both actively managed and index portfolios that charge 0% expense ratios. Cons. Your coaching sessions are with the next available investment representative, not a dedicated advisor. The portfolios include a handful of active bond funds, which we view as a plus. Fidelity's bond team is solid. But there aren't any active stock funds in the portfolios. That's a glaring omission. Given the big roster of superstar stock pickers who run other funds at the firm. Takeaway. Fidelity Go with unlimited coaching is a good step up from the firm's robo-service, and it's reasonably priced. Investors looking for a more personalized portfolio have a hybrid option at Fidelity, Fidelity Managed Portfolios. It's pricier with a $50,000 minimum and 1.1% in annual fees. That doesn't get you a dedicated advisor, you're still team-advised, but the portfolio, which hold ETFs and mutual funds, are unique for each client. J.P. Morgan Wealth Management Hybrid Offering. Basics. The minimum investment is $25,000, which costs 0.60% a year. Account balances of $250,000 or greater pay 0.50%. Pros. You meet by phone or video with an investment professional to discuss your goals, paying for a new home, say, or college tuition, as well as your tolerance for risk, time horizon, and other preferences, such as investing with environmental, social, and corporate governance attributes in mind. The advisor matches you with one or more than 20 portfolios that hold ETFs and mutual funds, geared to certain risk profiles. J.P. Morgan's chief investment office team, which manages $500 billion in assets, drives the big picture asset allocation and chooses the underlying holdings. Annual check-ins make sure you're on track, but you get unlimited access to an advisor anytime. Cons. Until your account balance hits $250,000, you've got a team of advisors helping you, not a dedicated person. All advisors hold necessary licenses and are registered according to state requirements for investment advisors. Most have the Wealth Management Certified Professional Certification, an Advanced Financial Planning Designation, and or another recognized designation, such as CFP or CFA. But the investment advisors can't advise on any estate planning or tax questions. takeaway. The biggest draw here would be for JP Morgan Chase Bank customers who want to keep all of their money, banking, saving, and investing at one firm. Merrill Guided Investing with an Advisor. Basics. Merrill Guided Investing with an Advisor, or MGIA for short, requires $20,000 to get started and costs 0.85% in annual management fees. Pros. You get unlimited one-on-one time with a dedicated Merrill Financial Solutions advisor who will help you get started on the robo platform, in person or virtually. The advisor will assist you as you identify goals and needs and assess your risk tolerance and time horizon, all to land you on the optimal portfolio, says Mark Granshaw, who heads the firm's consumer investment products team. The More Than Digital offering, he adds, includes an annual review with your advisor. Plus, although you have access to the same 24 portfolios that robo-only customers get, including tax-aware and sustainable portfolios, you can also choose among another 13 portfolios, crafted by Merrill's Chief Investment Office and called CIO Select Portfolios, that are available to MGIA customers only. The CIO decides on the broad asset allocation for these portfolios and picks the underlying ETFs and mutual funds that fill them. Cons. The annual fee is hefty. Charging 0.85%, Merrill Guided Investing with an Advisor is one of the more expensive hybrid offerings, if not the most expensive. But MGIA customers get a lot in return. There are the aforementioned portfolios, available only to MGIA clients, and it's the only service highlighted in this story that offers a dedicated advisor from the get-go. MGIA customers who bank at parent company Bank of America can get a break on the annual fee, but it's not all that much. For clients with a combined banking and investment balance of $20,000 to $50,000, the fee discount shaves off just 0.05 percentage point off the total. Takeaway. If keeping all of your financial life at one firm is appealing to you, you'll find convenience by banking at Bank of America and investing at Merrill Edge. Plus, if you're the type of investor who wants to sit down face-to-face with a financial consultant, Bank of America's extensive network of 3,600 branches makes that doable. SoFi Robo Investing. Basics. SoFi's automated investment advisory service, which charges 0.25% a year and has a $50 minimum initial investment, has always been a hybrid offering, says Brian Walsh, SoFi's head of advice and planning, because every customer gets a free one-time virtual 30-minute meeting with a financial planner. Pros. Most of the financial planners at SoFi hold the CFP designation. The rest are working toward it, says Walsh. On top of the low minimum and low fees, SoFi Robo Investing portfolios are backed by recommendations from experts at SoFi and BlackRock. The Robo offers 30 portfolios, 15 geared for a retirement account, and another 15 for taxable accounts, that hold mutual funds and ETFs. Choose from three broad types of approaches and five different risk tolerance varieties. There are classic stock bond portfolios, portfolios with a big slug in alternative strategies, and finally, a sustainable portfolio filled with ETFs focused on ESG criteria. Cons. A one-time meeting with a financial planner is underwhelming. If you need more financial help than the one-time session, you'll have to upgrade to a $10 a month SoFi Plus membership, which gets you unlimited access to a financial planner. SoFi checking and savings accounts holders with direct paycheck deposit become SoFi Plus members automatically for free. If not, the $10 monthly fee for SoFi Plus membership, basically $120 over a 12-month period, amounts to an additional 0.48 percentage point fee on a $25,000 account balance. Of course, the more you invest, the less consequential the added SoFi Plus membership fee. A $50,000 investment brings the entire cost of unlimited access down to a more palatable annual fee of approximately 0.45%. Takeaway. SoFi Robo Investing with a SoFi Plus membership makes the most sense if you have at least $50,000 to invest. There are other perks to SoFi Plus membership that add value, including a 1% match on recurring SoFi Invest account deposits, which stay in the account for 2 years, and the sustainability portfolio may appeal to some investors. Vanguard Personal Advisor. Basics. The granddaddy of hybrid advisory services calls for $50,000 in eligible Vanguard brokerage accounts to start, and costs roughly between 0.25 and 0.35% in annual fees, depending on the portfolio you choose. Pros. A team of advisors is ready to assist you as often as you want. They are not required to be CFPs, though some are, but all have passed the Series 65 and 66 exam, which is required in most states to give investment advice, says Doug Mento, head of advice at Vanguard. And they can help you make decisions about Social Security, healthcare funding, or withdrawing retirement savings, among other financial topics. Vanguard's wealth management service can grow with you, too, if you choose. Once your account balance crosses the $500,000 threshold, you will be given the option to move up to the next advisory tier at Vanguard, Personal Advisor Select, which gets you a dedicated certified financial planner for an annual fee of approximately 0.30%. Personal Advisor clients started by choosing one of three suggested portfolios. There's an all-indexed ETF model, one that's focused on ESG index funds, and an active index combination portfolio that holds mutual funds and ETFs. But that's only a starting point. Each investment plan is then personalized. The advisor can adjust the tilts to international stocks in relation to U.S. stocks, for instance, or evaluate moves in your taxable account, including whether municipal bonds offer better income opportunity or whether it makes sense to hold on to any existing stock holdings, even if they aren't part of the originally recommended portfolio, for tax reasons. Obviously, expense ratios are relatively low. This is Vanguard, after all. An all-index portfolio has an average expense ratio of 0.05%. Even the expense ratios of the active funds in the active index portfolio are dirt cheap, ranging between 0.30% and 0.41%. Cons. The minimum is higher than for most other hybrids, and it may be a hurdle for investors just starting out. Also, although the active funds in the active index portfolio are mostly good, there is one exception. Vanguard Advice Select Dividend Growth has lagged its benchmark, the S&P U.S. Dividend Growers Index, in each of the past 4 calendar years since the start of 2022. Takeaway. The low fees at Vanguard are certainly a big draw, and a semi-personalized investment portfolio means Vanguard Personal Advisor offers added oomph that the other hybrids don't. Unloved energy stocks are a bargain. Cleaned up balance sheets and generous dividends make these dirt cheap shares worth a look. Love and energy make the world go round, but investors have shown a cold, cold heart to the energy sector, particularly conventional oil and gas producers. They suffered from a widespread belief that fossil fuel energy is in long-term decline. The near-term economic forecast hasn't helped the stocks either. Many skeptics feel global growth in 2026 won't be enough to push the price of oil much above the current levels of about $60 per barrel for West Texas Intermediate crude, which is down from highs near $80 in January 2025. And even if demand picks up, producers are standing ready to supply more oil and send the price back down. That has made energy stocks especially cheap in a market gone gangbusters on enthusiasm for artificial intelligence. The energy sector has become very neglected by mutual funds, says Jill Carey Hall, the head of strategy for U.S. small and mid-capitalization stocks at investment firm B of A Securities. Certainly, from a valuation perspective, it looks attractive compared with its history, she says. The sector's bargain price tag, along with a desire to diversify portfolios overly concentrated in pricey AI-related fare, has now reached the point that investment strategists are increasingly bringing energy stocks into their warm embrace. And that suggests the stocks should probably make up a bigger share of your holdings. Better days ahead. I think people are really missing the mark of how oil markets are improving in the medium term, says Tyler Rosenlicht, who supervises three energy-focused investment strategies at fund firm Cohen & Steers. He believes rising demand from energy-hungry industries will exceed oil supply as early as 2027, pushing prices higher. The reality is, the world is short on energy, he says. Cole Smead, the CEO of Smead Capital, says he can't see oil prices falling further, as some bears have forecast. The world loves oil at these prices. Adjusted for inflation, $60 a barrel oil is obscenely cheap, says Smead. That implies energy investors may find a floor at current levels, with the future looking up, even if some patience is required. In the meantime, many companies have cleaned up their balance sheets, cut costs, and focused on returning cash to investors. They're well positioned to withstand middling oil prices, and they're poised for big benefits if oil prices rise faster than expected. Some corners of the energy market already sport a more bullish outlook. For instance, many U.S. energy companies are benefiting from the growth of liquefied natural gas, or LNG. U.S. companies produce natural gas at rock-bottom costs and transform it into a product that can be shipped to Asia or Europe. Closer to home, the builders of data centers that power AI are increasingly looking to natural gas as a source of power. We found a handful of energy stocks that are bargain now and poised to prosper as the energy sector perks up. With revenue and a market value both around $9 billion, APA is a small company that acts like a big company, which may make it an appealing takeover target for an even bigger company. The shares currently trade at 9x estimated earnings for the next 12 months. In the U.S., APA operates primarily in the Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico, an area responsible for nearly half of the country's oil production. APA, formerly known as Apache, also produces oil in Egypt, and it has offshore drilling projects off the coast of Suriname and the UK. This collection of assets should catch the eye of major energy producers, says Smead, whose Smead Value Fund counts APA as one of its top 10 holdings. He also suggests that APA's liabilities are an asset. The company's debt has an average interest rate of 5.5% and an average term of 13 years, attractive to a buyer looking to lower the cost of its debt and extend its maturity schedule, says Smead. Can I go out and borrow billions of dollars over a 13-year duration at 5.5%? The answer is no, I can't. Jay Peters of Connecticut-based money manager New Edge Wealth holds APA for his clients and likes the stock, takeover or no takeover. This is a company known for capital discipline, operational efficiency, and really diversified production. Having that global footprint provides some insulation when you don't have a ton of certainty on prices here in the U.S. The company's cost efficiencies and relatively low debt load position it well for the energy cycle turns, Peter says. You might have to be patient, but I think the upside is there for long-term investors. In a relatively strong showing for an energy producer, APA stock has gained 8% in 2025 through November. An AI tie-in. Instead of drilling for oil and gas, Baker Hughes sells equipment to the companies that do drill. The firm is therefore known as an oil field services provider. But Baker now prefers to call itself an energy technology company, thanks to its industrial and energy technology segment, which now accounts for close to half the firm's $28 billion in annual sales. That emerging business serves LNG companies and the builders of data centers, and it's what prompts Stuart Glickman, director of equity research at CFRA, to rate the stock a strong buy. And after falling 12% in 2025 through November, EOG Resources trades at just 11x earnings. It's far from damaged goods, however, with an impressive collection of assets, a disciplined history of growth, and a commitment to send most of its cash flow back to shareholders. And this has been readings from Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.